Liberty Shirt Company is the perfect holiday season gift because of the awesome flannels and casual shirts that we love to wear around no matter the season. But they are not just shirts that college-age guys like us love to wear. They make shirts that your dad, uncle, and granddad will love too. Every shirt is custom, so it's fit to your liking. And what's not to love about a clothing company that actually makes their shirts in America instead of China like most brands? So if you're in the giving spirit, head over to libertyshirtco.com right now. And if you use the promo code 3PEAT at checkout, you're going to save 10% on your order. And if you buy two shirts, you will get a free pair of suspenders. That's libertyshirtco.com and the promo code is 3PEAT. Hello and welcome back to another 3PEAT podcast episode, episode 11 of season 2. I'm your host, Josh Fromowitz, and once again, joined with me are my co-hosts,
Stephen Benazzo
and Alex Castle.
Boys, we got another great show planned. NBA draft is next week, so basketball is coming back. Obviously, the regular season is going to start December 22nd, confirmed yesterday, and free agency starting later this month. November 22nd is when players will be able to choose where they want to go. So it's exciting, the world of basketball, but we're starting with the draft because that's next Wednesday, the 18th. A lot of big names, a lot of questions. Where will they go? LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards. Those are just the top three. But there's so many more talented guys in the draft. So my first question to you both are, who do you like in this draft going one? It's a tough question, but who's going one? Steve, we'll start with you.
So, well, first thing is, I can't wait for the draft. I'm like really looking forward to it. I just love any sort of draft, whether the NFL draft, NBA draft, even the MLB and NHL draft. But this year, it's there's no clear distinct guy who could go number one. I mean, obviously, like you just listed LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman. But last year, we all knew it was going to be Zion. Or a couple years ago, DeAndre Ayton. There's so many guys that could go number one. So I'm going to give a couple of scenarios. If Minnesota keeps the number one pick, they should go with Anthony Edwards. I think he's just a better fit for them because you already have D'Angelo Russell, who is – you know, kind of a bigger guard who you should be able to let him run the floor. Cause look what he did with Brooklyn. He brought them to the playoffs. He had like his best career year when he was a primary ball handler. He then goes to Golden State where they try to pair him up with Steph and he just doesn't do as well because he doesn't have that big of a role that he did in Brooklyn. So if you try to get LaMelo Ball, now you're just kind of contradicting what D'Angelo Russell's, D'Lo's role is, and I just don't think that's the best fit. And then why would you take Wiseman when you have Carl Anthony Towns, Cat, which is one of the best centers in this league? So that's why I think Anthony Edwards is the best fit for them, and he's probably just one of the most polished players in this draft. Now, if they decide to trade the number one pick, then I could say, well, LaMelo Ball is a good guarantee to go number one because a lot of teams are high on him because they think he has one of the highest potentials in this draft. As we know, his defense is definitely has to improve his defense, but we all know his offensive playmaking ability. So we're just going to have to wait and see. It's really going to come down to draft night and whether or not the Timberwolves stay and choose at the number one pick or if they trade it. Castle, I don't know what your thoughts are with that.
This draft is going to be very interesting. Just looking at the top three picks alone, so much talent. I will have to say, though, I'm not sure if I'm fully buying into LaMelo Ball at the number one pick. He's loaded with talent. Arguably could be the best ball brother out of all three of them. I think he's going to be. But with handling certain things that I feel like he doesn't have yet. You know, this was a kid who never experienced, went straight into playing professional ball. And I think, you know, when you play at the college level, there are certain experiences that you have. And he never had that. And this is a kid that's also been in the spotlight since he's been, what, 15, 16 years old, maybe even younger. So I just feel like there are a lot of factors going into that. I don't really know what teams are going to make moves to get to the top three. I mean, my Knicks, I really hoping they'd be a top five pick. Unfortunately, we're sitting at number eight, which is not ideal. But if I had to say who I think will go number one, I think it's going to be Edwards. I really like him. Really think he's a solid guy. He's explosive. He can shoot it. He can dunk it. Just his body build just seems like a very athletic guy. I look at him at number one. In terms of where I see Melo, it's a toss-up. He could go to either two or three. Really depends on what these teams are looking for and what the scouting report.
So my next question for both of you, whoever wants to go first, I don't care. Drafting LaMelo Ball, will that come with any risks? Because we saw with Lonzo, LaVar Ball, it was like a package deal. So do you think LaVar Ball will continue his voicing his opinions and being in the media, or will he continue his silence like he has recently?
Listen, I mean, obviously he's going to say something when he gets drafted and he'll make his presence known again a little bit. But I think he has toned it down for good. He's going to be supportive of his sons, especially now that it's LaMelo's time to enter this league. But I think you'll let LaMelo's game do the talking. And I think the biggest risk with LaMelo is not even LeVar. I just think it's LaMelo's mindset. Because Lonzo has a good mindset. Lonzo works hard and wants to win and wants to be better. Not that LaMelo doesn't, because I'm not saying that at all. But I feel like sometimes LaMelo thinks his game is good enough to where he doesn't have to put in a lot of effort. And yes, that works against high school kids or overseas, but that's not going to work in the NBA. If you guys kind of like know what I'm saying. So that's my biggest risk for drafting him. I think it can pay off tremendously. I think he will become one of the better players in this league. And I think he, like I said earlier, he has a very high potential. But if his mindset, if he starts getting a little lackadaisical, if he starts thinking like, oh, I'm like, you know, I'm nasty. I don't need to put any effort in. I don't, you know, my game, I'm just too talented for me to really like practice more. Then that team who drafted him is going to be in a bit of a rude awakening. And same with LaMelo Ball himself.
So it sounds like you're kind of comparing him to Andrew Wiggins, per se.
A little bit, yeah. More like that.
Okay. So moving on, we'll talk about the Warriors. We know that they had an off year. They were dealing with a lot of injuries. But sitting at the number two pick, they have Curry back. They have Klay Thompson back. If they add, let's say, Wiseman, who they're projected to take, at a big man, it seems like it's kind of like a Spurs in back in 97 situation where they draft, or 98, where they drafted Tim Duncan. They're going through injuries, then automatically will become a title contender, which a lot of teams predict. What do we think? Do they move down and have a team move up, or do they draft Wiseman and be one of the scariest teams out West again?
You got to draft Wiseman. There's no other. I mean, they have choices. And I'm not their general manager. I'm not going to make the decision for them. But if I were them, if you have the chance, which they most likely will, I don't think James Wiseman will go number one, because if the Timberwolves pick, like I said, they're not going to take Wiseman because they already have Cat. And if they do trade it, I think a team that's trading for the number one pick will more than likely draft LaMelo Ball. I mean, they could take Wiseman, or who knows? Maybe Golden State wants to ensure they get Wiseman and they move up. But either way, I think he should be able to available at pick number two. And I mean, if you think about it, their roster the past couple of years when they've won a few NBA finals, they've had Steph, one of the best point guards. They have Klay, one of the best shooting guards. They had Kevin Durant. I blanked for some reason, but they had KD. who was like top two small forwards. And then they had Draymond, who, I mean, his play has gone down, but he's still a solid power forward to have. But it was like their center position was the only one that was lacking, if you were to call it. And, you know, they still had some good play from their center when JaVale McGee was there. And then, I mean, Boogie didn't really get to play there too long because he got injured. But still, it was that center position was definitely their weakest position. So if you can add a guy like Wiseman, who is tall, athletic, and he could shoot pretty, you know, not maybe not the best, but he's not like Cat or Jokic out here, you know, sniping threes like almost, you know, every single possession. But it's not like he can't shoot at all. So if he can get a big man like that, then I think they're going to be going. I mean, this was perfect. What they did was just like those guys got injured. They lost. They're going to get Wiseman, who's going to become one of the best centers in this league in a few years, and they're going to be set. So I think that's a way to go. They could look at a guy like maybe Anthony Edwards, but if he was a little taller maybe, because he's more of a shooting guard, and, you know, you got to keep Clay at that guard position. So if he was bigger, because, I mean, Anthony Edwards is a tremendous finisher, and, you know, he drives to the lane, does a great job at driving the lane. So I think that he's got to go Wiseman. Do you agree, Josh?
Yes and no, but I'm going to let Castle go first, and then I'll give my pros and cons.
I have to agree with Steve. I think Wiseman's the way to go. I mean, you know, the point for me that really drives home with drafting Wiseman is they didn't really get the full experience with Cousins. They need a young guy in the front court like Wiseman, and I think you bring him in with experienced stars in the league like Curry and Thompson to mentor him. You throw Steve Kerr in there, one of the most respected coaches in the league. To me, it's a no-brainer. Drafting him really will put Golden State back where they need to be.
Yeah, drafting Wiseman will definitely put them on top. But I'm not too sold that Wiseman is the guy for them to take, because during their championship runs, they never had a true center. They play small ball. And by small ball, I mean Draymond at the center. That is their death lineup. And adding a big man like they had with McGee only slowed them down. So I think it definitely won't hurt having Wiseman, but I don't think that drafting him will put them more so over the top.
Well, now, but you got to think about this, though. When they had those championship runs, they had KD, who was a tremendous shooter, but he also had great length. Now you don't have KD. So who's going to be at their small forward position? Like Andrew Wiggins, right? He's still there. So he's not, I mean, he could shoot, but he's not as consistent as KD, and he's not as long as KD. So if you had Wiseman, it's not like Wiseman will slow them down. I mean, like I said, he's a very athletic guy, even though he's a big dude. He's like, what, 7 feet tall, 7'1"? But he's very athletic, very quick, very elusive for that size. So I think he will fit well with that team. And then he'll be able to use his size and length and speed to get the ball to guys, to Steph, to Clay, and then, you know, other guys like Wiggins, Draymond. I'm trying to think of guys on that bench. I can't even think of it because that team now has changed a little bit. But I think you gotta just go Wiseman if you're them. Or if you trade down, then there's other guys you can go, but if they're sitting at number two, that's why I think that Wiseman would be the best bet for them.
I think he will end up going to the Warriors, but they did win a championship before KD was there, and when they had Harrison Barnes, who I'd say Harrison Barnes is quite similar to Wiggins, and they would have Wiggins and Clay and Curry and Iguodala and Green. So that's still a very small lineup, and cool. The Warriors could match that because they have Pascal on their bench. They have Looney still.
But, true.
Yeah. Cass, what do you think?
It's really tough to say. I mean, I really don't know. I'm still going with, I think they should go with Wiseman, but I have a question that I pose for you, Josh, and Steve too. I've seen some stuff recently about the Warriors and possibly trading Green and some people being unhappy with his play. Can you see a big trade with Green possibly helping the Warriors bump up their pick? And if so, would that solidify them drafting Wiseman?
I think trading Green would definitely solidify drafting Wiseman. But the thing is, I don't know what many teams want Green, because, yeah, he brings physicality and he brings the toughness, but he also can be a liability, a lot of ejections. So not many teams want that in the locker room. I don't want to say he's a cancer to the locker room, but he's definitely not the veteran leader that teams want, especially at that age. So I think it'll be tough to get much for Green, but yeah, that's interesting.
Steve? Yeah. To that point, in his contract, I'm pretty sure he signed a pretty lengthy and expensive contract. And then his shooting has definitely gone downhill. And even last year when Curry was out, Clay was out, KD is gone, Draymond had a chance to step up and kind of take lead of that team, and he just struggled to. Pascal, the rookie, had to. So at one time, Castle, I think definitely – Draymond Green would be like worth a lot more, and teams would definitely be like, yes, you know, we'd be willing to trade our pick for your pick and Draymond, you know, if the Warriors are trying to move up. In this case, would be just one pick to number one, but that's a big jump. So, but if they do end up they do end up trading him on draft night or close to draft night, which is only next week, next Wednesday, a week from now. So, yes, I think that would definitely solidify them drafting Wiseman, because they would need a big man. There would be no point in drafting a smaller guard or even LaMelo, who's bigger, but LaMelo's not going to play power forward for you. He's going to want to, you know, control the ball. So that's why I just think if there's definitely one guy the Warriors won't draft, it's got to be LaMelo. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, and I mean, we'll see in a week, but our teams, they're looking good for the most part. The Knicks are at 8. So, I mean, most Knicks fans are not too happy about that. Steve, your Bulls are sitting pretty at number 4. And the Nets, they're not in the lottery because they're actually a decent team. So, Steve, you had the best pick out of us. So, let's hear from you. What do you think the Bulls will do at number 4?
I think the Bulls are in a very good spot at 4. You want to always get the number one pick. But in this draft, I think number 4 is a solid place to pick. You kind of hold some power because there's a lot of teams that want to move up this year. Like Castle, like your Knicks could easily want to move up, or the Hawks could want to move up. There's a lot of teams that could want to move up. So the Bulls have a chance of moving back, or technically they can move up. I want them to either stay where they're at or possibly move down. I think I want them to stay at number 4. So there's a few guys I like in this draft who I wouldn't mind the Bulls drafting. I know a lot of mock drafts have the Bulls taking a point guard. I don't really want a point guard. The Bulls draft LaMelo. If he somehow falls, I wouldn't necessarily mind. But we just drafted Kobe White last year with a 7th overall pick. And when he was off the bench, he was our most consistent, most reliable scorer. And then the 10 games or so they played after their All-Star break before the season was suspended due to COVID, and he started some of those games, he was averaging almost 25 points per game. I mean, this dude was playing pretty legit. So I want him to get a real chance from game one to basically the end of the season. So that leaves me with, then we have LaVine at shooting guard, Markkanen and Wendell as big men. So we kind of need, you know, another forward. A small forward. We have Otto Porter Jr., but he's been injured a lot, and he has a player option. Who knows if he'll accept it or not. So enough with the actual roster and more who they're going to pick. So to be honest, I think the Bulls really like Denny Avdija. I think I'm pronouncing it somewhat close to it. He is a European player. And listen, I think our new general manager, president of operations. So Arturas Karnasovas, who was recently hired from the Denver Nuggets, and then a new GM, Mark Eversley. I think they like Denny. Denny, you know, he's a small forward, 6'9", 215. So a little, you know, he has good size. He can add on a little more weight. But I'm reading a little report on him, and basically he's a versatile forward with the playmaking ability of a guard. So you get that playmaking ability of a guard that a lot of these experts think the Bulls need or want, but in a forward position and a size of a forward. And basically, he's got a good feel for the game. His defense is phenomenal. And his shooting, you know, they say it could definitely be improved, but it's solid. It's not like he is working with nothing. Like, he has a good shot. He just got to become a little more consistent to it and make sure it develops a little bit better into the NBA and translates to the NBA. But, you know, you see a guy like Luka Doncic, some of these, you know, overseas European players. So Denny is from Israel. And you see a guy like Luka Doncic and all the success he's having, or a guy like Kristaps Porzingis, or just any of these other European guys, overseas guys, like, they are just, they're becoming some of the best guys in this league. So if the Bulls go with Denny Avdija, I would be more than okay. I'd be thrilled with that pick. And I, to be honest, I think since Karnasovas comes from a European background, I think he really pulls towards European guys and overseas guys. And I think he will fall in love with Denny's game and who he is. And I think I would not be surprised if on draft night, with the 4th overall pick, the Bulls select Denny Avdija.
Yeah, I've been reading a little into him and seeing like some of his like highlights, and he's a solid player. He didn't play much in from Maccabi Tel Aviv, but he's a very pro ready guy. His build, his athleticism, his ball handling, everything about him screams potential. So if the Bulls take him, I'd be upset. I think that'd be a very, very good move on the Bulls' end.
Same here.
Castle, the Knicks. Ooh. They're about 7 picks behind where they should have been. So what is backup plan, like the real backup plan, going to be for Wednesday night?
So assuming the Knicks don't do anything to trade up, which I really hope they would, but I just don't think they have enough to do it. Here's how I look at it. So Cole Anthony has been talked about a lot. He's a decently mentioned prospect out of Carolina. I could see them drafting him, but I feel like there are other guards that could be available. I really like this guy, Hayes. I've got to learn about him a little more. Didn't even know that he's a French-American basketball player, which is kind of an interesting aspect because of Nilakita. So I feel like that could have some influence. But aside from that, the guy that I really like the best that I say that they should go for is Okoro, the guy from Auburn. I've been disappointed with Kevin Knox. I was actually talking to Matt Angler, our social media guy, about this. Shout out to Matt for giving me the insider scoop. I've been a little slow with the research as a Knicks fan here. But, yeah, I mean, I got to look at his stats and got to look at him, and Kevin Knox just has not been putting up the numbers. This guy was hyped up a lot. I was really excited when the Knicks drafted him, and he just hasn't been shooting. He can't really body up that well. So I think you draft him at number 8. That could be a huge boost for the Knicks. I kind of hope they don't draft Anthony. I mean, I know I talked about him earlier. I don't know if he's the right guard, but, yeah, I would say Isaac is definitely who we should take at 8. He's young. He only has one season belt, so that could be a little concerning. But, you know, young talent, young raw talent coming into the garden, it could be good for us.
Coro is a solid pick. Steve, were you about to say something?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see the Knicks, because you got quite a bit of a new group in there too. Tom Thibodeau, this will be his first draft with the Knicks. And then was Leon Rose there last year when they drafted RJ, or is that your old GM?
I believe that's the old one.
That was the old GM, yes.
So this will be Leon Rose's new, you know, first draft of the Knicks too. So I'm interested. I mean, it sucks because, I, like, not to be this guy, but like Lisa Bowles, like with Karnašovas, Mark Eversley, the new front office in our new coach, Billy Donovan, you know, they got to work with the number four overall pick. That's pretty good to work with. The poor Knicks, you know, again, just getting screwed by the lottery system. They have a later pick to work with. So, but hey, like Castle, you know, you guys can always trade up. But there's some solid point guard options. You know, I even like Tyrese Haliburton for you guys, Iowa State. I think he'll be pretty solid. And, I mean, listen, who knows? Any guy can fall. I mean, I'm not saying LaMelo Ball will fall to you guys that late, but the Knicks do have some options.
Cole Anthony, though, I don't know if I'm too sold on him being the Knicks solution. Just in his short sample size, yeah, he was pretty good at UNC. But it just seems like he was kind of overhyped. Reminds me, like, there's someone else in the draft who I'm not a fan of, Nico Mannion, also kind of overhyped. So I hope the Nets don't take him. But I don't know. For the Nets, they need depth off the bench, primarily a two or a three. So I'm thinking if it's a two guard who could handle the ball, it'd probably be RJ Hampton. He played overseas in New Zealand. He'd be a solid guy to help out Dinwiddie with the ball handling skills for the bench, provide some scoring so Dinwiddie doesn't have to be the only guy scoring off our bench. Or I think it's Josh Green or is it Jalen Green from Arizona?
It's Josh Green, right?
Yeah, he's also a two guard. So provide some scoring, provide defense also. He could be a solid guy, but we're sitting at 19th, so it's not like there's too many great options. But who knows? Sleepers do exist.
I think if you guys could get RJ Hampton, that would be huge for your bench, and that could be scary for the Nets.
Speaking of sleepers, though, every draft has them, whether it's Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, not really Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Luka Doncic, whoever. I know it's still early. The draft hasn't actually happened, but I have a personal pick for sleeper, but I want to hear who you guys think might have a good shot at being sleepers this draft.
Well, Josh, I know we agreed kind of on ours, but I'll choose another guy. Listen, my sleepers, I have multiple because I think there's a few guys that are going to do a lot better than, even if they're drafted higher, I think they're going to do a lot better than what their people might expect. So the first one, I think, you know, Castle, you were talking about him earlier, Isaac Okoro. I think this kid, he's young. He's only 19. He's got some pretty good height and great defender, but he also could shoot. It can get better at shooting, but, you know, he could score, though. And he's a good playmaker. And Auburn now is not typically known for basketball, but the past couple years have been very good. And Okoro is one of those guys showing why, you know, why they had that good success. And then another guy that I also like who I think will do a lot, will do pretty good. And again, I don't know if he's necessarily a sleeper, but is Onyeka Okongwu from USC. And it just seems like the Pac-12 basketball hasn't gotten as much hype as it used to with like the Big East, the Villanova, obviously the ACC, Big Ten. So the Pac-12's kind of lost some of its hype that it used to have with UCLA and stuff like that. But Onyeka Okongwu, oh my gosh, I'm just absolutely butchering his name, but I apologize to him. But I mean, listen, same thing. He's young. He's a bit smaller for a bigger guy. He'd probably be more of a power forward than center. But again, he's a phenomenal defender. He can score. And they're saying he's got shades of Bam Adebayo. So if you got shades of him, then you got a pretty bright future. As we all know, Bam Adebayo was a key member for the Heat going to the finals this season.
Yeah, and fun fact about Onyeka Okongwu, he played with the Ball Brothers in high school. So they're talking about that being the greatest high school team ever, So that's a interesting comparison.
Yeah, that's a lot of talent on that team. I mean, I think
three balls and Ogongwu and LeVar being the hype man.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bronny Jr.'s high school team now with
Zaire Wade.
I mean, yeah, Zaire Wade, Bronny Jr. There's this kid. What's his name? I'm blanking on his name. He just committed to Kentucky. He was a five-star prospect. Brandon Boston. He's going to be a top pick in, you know, the next NBA draft or the year after that, whenever he's eligible. So there's a lot of talent on that team. Maybe we're not now switching to high school basketball, but there's a lot of talent that that these guys come from.
Castle, what are you thinking for sleepers?
So my sleeper that I'm going to go with is another center, Isaiah Stewart out of Washington. He's my sleeper. I feel like in today's NBA, a lot of these bigger guys are more, you know, yes, they're still physical, they're still playing in the paint, but kind of taking the more shooting approach now. I mean, you see guys like Anthony Davis who are going to be on the wing taking threes. And I feel like Stewart, he brings kind of the traditional physicality of a center, you know, young, raw talent. Guy averaged 8.8 rebounds, which I think that's solid in his first year. So I think any team that needs to really fill that center position, I think you bring him into the mix with the right coaching and he could be very nice for your front court. Don't know where he's going to end up, but I can definitely see him being solid.
Yeah, he'll bring the physicality on the inside for sure. Him, Yuduka Azubuike from Kansas, kind of are similar. Big men who will own the paint, get blocks, get rebounds. So that's a good pick. Mine, I'm going to give two. And Steve, you're going to agree with me for the first one. That's Obi Toppin.
Oh, yeah.
Dayton, he's a beast. He is the player of the year. He's not getting the recognition, though, that he deserves when it comes to the draft. He's being overshadowed by the top three guys that we mentioned earlier. But great size for a swing forward. He could play three, the four, or the five. He could handle the ball. He's 6'9", 220, I believe. Athletic, can dunk, can guard any position. So I really like him, whatever team, whether he falls to the Knicks or the Bulls take a chance and want to move on from Larry Markkanen or something. I don't know. He'll be a day one starter, I believe, and he'll contribute right away. Another kind of similar to Obi Toppin, Precious Achiuwa out of Memphis. And he was overshadowed because he played alongside James Wiseman when he started his early days at Memphis. And then Wiseman transferred out. So Achiuwa got more attention. He also is a ball handler. He's a big guy, 6'7", but I think he's like, I don't know how much he weighs, but he's pretty big. So he's kind of like Draymond Green. He shoots, defends. So he's like a 3-and-D guy out of the four. So those are two guys that I'm pretty sure will make some pretty big impacts right away.
And the thing with Obi Toppin, I think the only – I mean, there's – you know, there could be multiple knacks to a guy's game. But I think the biggest knock on Toppin is his age. Because a lot of these guys are 18, 19 years old, and Toppin is 22. So, I mean, granted, 22 is still very young, and you can still have him for, you know, 15 years, and that's a long time to have a guy. But, like, yeah, just, Josh, to your point, I mean, he is just, like, he is super athletic for being a bigger dude. I mean, he just threw down some of the, like, craziest dunks you'll ever see mid-game. And not only that, he could shoot, and he could play defense pretty well. I mean, he averaged 7.5 rebounds. He shot 39%. I mean, that's why he's one of my favorite just prospects in general. I wanted the Bulls, and I think the Bulls will take Denny, but if they took Toppin, I would not be disappointed with that because I think his game is one of the best. I mean, like, he won the best college basketball player of the year. So
it'll be interesting to see. The draft, like we said earlier, is next Wednesday, November 18th. So next show we'll do a draft analysis. It'll be exciting who we see, which teams win, which teams lose the draft. How bad will the Knicks actually draft? Because it seems like every year it just gets worse and worse. But we got to move on to the pigskin. I actually am not too upset to talk some football because the Jets didn't terribly disappoint me. But the Giants look good against Washington, but I don't know if that's what Giant fans want to see. And the Bears. Bears, they're still there. Says Steve, you're first.
This is going to be surprising, but I kind of hope the Bears lose out from now. Because when they're 5-1, it was like, all right, they don't maybe look like the best 5-1 team ever, but they were still winning games, and they were still 5-1 and won the top seeds in the NFC. Now they've lost 3 in a row, and they're not legit. They're not going to win the Super Bowl, even if they somehow made the playoffs. They're going to get like an early exit. So pretty much, why not lose out? Because if we keep winning games, we're just going to – our draft picks are going to get worse and worse, and then we're going to miss out on a QB. And I want a guy like Trey Lance or especially Zach Wilson. I love Zach Wilson now, and that's what I want the Bears to get. And the problem is Zach Wilson's making a bigger name for himself each week happens because a dude can ball. So, like, as much as I want to see the Bears go to the playoffs, I know they're just not going to do anything when they're in there. So that's why it's tough to watch because I want to root for them because I love them and they're my team and I want to support them. But I'm trying to be realistic and I know they're not going to go anywhere with this team, this play calling, this just, I don't even know what else, quarterback play. So there's going to be a lot of moves that have to be made. It's going to have to be a lot of reflection, starting with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. And I mean, I like Nagy as a coach. I don't like him as a offensive play caller, and he should realize that. If he wants to save his job, I think he really should not even consider, but give up play calling. And I like John D. DeFlippo to call the plays. I think he'll call plays better than our actual offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. But I think you got to do some reflecting. You know, is Nagy the guy to lead forward, or should you bring in a guy like Eric Bieniemy or a Joe Brady or some of these other candidates? I mean, there's some good candidates that could be hired for head coaches. And then you got to think Ryan Pace. You know, he made the Khalil Mack trade a couple years ago. All right, that was a good move. But now, not that it hasn't paid off, but you've only made the playoffs once. You know, you're paying some guys some big money. You've given up many draft capital and assets to get a quarterback. Mitch didn't work out. Nick Foles hasn't really worked out. You signed Mike Lennon to that massive contract. So basically he's struck out 0-3 against for getting a not even franchise quarterback, but just a decent quarterback, and that just has not happened. So I'm not going to keep going on my rant. Basically, the Bears have a lot of decisions to make, and I don't know if they're necessarily ready for it. And I mean, I think I'm ready for it, but we'll see come the end of the season.
It's crazy how the span of, say, 2 weeks, I don't want to like compare them, but it seems like Jets and Bear fans kind of have flip-flopped their views. Cause as a Jet fan, like, I'm very happy right now. Like, we're in a very good place. And I'm not just saying that because we are the worst team and we are on pace to get the number one pick. But Adam Gase gave up play calling. And in the Monday night game against New England, our offense was really impressive. And granted, the Patriots' D was terrible and they were battling a lot of injuries, no Stephon Gilmore, whatever. But Joe Flacco torched them, 3 touchdowns. Our new coordinator, I don't even know who he is, but he let our receivers run, and there was plays for them, 50-yard bomb, 30-yard bombs, whatever. Perriman had 2 touchdowns. Crowder had 1. Mims looked very solid, and it was fun to watch. So, I mean, as a Jet fan, like, we did what we wanted. We played well and then lost the game at the end. So our tank is still on, which is good. But I feel bad for Darnold's Like, there's a bunch of Jet fans that are saying, well, should Flacco just play out the rest of the year instead of Darnold? And I see where they're coming from, but it's a very tough thing to see, and I can't be the one to judge that. So Gase has a lot of decisions to make over the course of our bye week.
And one last thing about the Bears. Like you said, once the Jets changed up play callers, the Jets offense was actually looked like somewhat of a competent NFL offense. Now, granted, they shouldn't be the best offense because you guys are the worst team in the league, but at least you were able to move the ball, score some points, and
made it competitive.
Yes, exactly. You know, Chicago, especially Nagy, he is so big about scheme. Like, this is my scheme, like my offense. This is like, he wants to be like the Chiefs so bad. Like, dude, you're not the Chiefs. This scheme may work for other teams like the Chiefs, but it's not going to work here. You got to adjust to your players. And he is having a hard time accepting that. Like, you know what? Not even that his offense doesn't work. I mean, pretty much it doesn't work. But, like, you know, if Mitch plays better under center play action, but then all you do is run shotgun and no play action, then, like, how are you going to really expect it to work if he, like, struggles with that? Or same thing with Foles, whatever. Like, he's just not good at adapting to his players. He just wants to say, you know, like, we have this, we have this, we have this. This should work, this should work, this should work. And week in and week out, basically from all the way to pretty much from 2018 to now, because even 2018, his offense wasn't even the greatest, but it wasn't nearly as bad as it has been 2019 and now 2020. So he's got to just either give up his ego of, like, this is my scheme, my offense, it's going to work no matter what, and then give up play calling and just be the leader of the team, or he's got to go.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting offseason for both of our teams. So moving on to the Giants. Daniel Jones, the man who owns Washington. He has 5 career wins, I believe, and 4 of them are against Washington. So, Castle, what do you have to say about the G-men, the boys in blue?
Getting a divisional win is always a good win. I mean, I was very happy with it. Our defense continues to look really nice. Very happy with what I've seen from the defense. Jones, I'm not going to say he looked 100% better, but he's definitely improving. He's really trying to work on those mental mistakes, which is good. Ingram actually catching the ball is always a good thing. I mean, you know, the guy's got butter fingers, but when he catches the ball, it's helpful. Running game, I actually wasn't too upset with. I mean, Gallman got another TD, which was nice. Alfred Morris had some solid rushes. It was a decent game on our part. I mean, a win is a win at the end of the day. What I will say is one of the biggest things that we struggle with is, I don't know if you want to call it first half fatigue. I don't know what you want to say, but every game that I've, for the most part, that I've seen, we come out very strong in the first 2 quarters. And then the second half of the game, it's like our guys are tired already. I mean, we only scored 1 field goal in the whole second half. So it's stuff like that, you know, if that's how you continue to operate, you're not going to be a successful team. So am I happy with the win? Yes, but would I like to see them continue to lose for the sake of a higher draft pick? Of course. I think we're still in a rebuilding stage. I don't know if that means drafting a new quarterback. In my opinion, I think the Giants got to start looking for a new offensive weapon, whether that's a wide receiver or tight end or both. These off-field issues with Golden Tate seem to be getting nowhere. I mean, more and more people are online are barking about how the Giants don't utilize him enough and this and that. I frankly don't want a player like that on the team, especially a veteran with all the experience that he's had. I think you bring someone new into the mix so you can let Slayton develop more. You know, I mean, everyone knows Slayton's going to be Jones' favorite target. So I feel like bringing someone else into the mix is going to help. And it also takes the pressure off Shepard a little bit, who's constantly dealing with his injuries. So that's what I think they need to do draft-wise. For the rest of the season, we'll see. This game against Philly is going to be very interesting. Last time we played them, it was a rough ending. We almost had it. That catch by Ingram killed us. The missed catch killed us. We could be bringing momentum into this game, so we'll see. It should be interesting. I'm not fully set on how I want the Giants to finish the season. I'm just more focused on the fact that we finally added another win to the win column.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting divisional game, to say the least. And since the Jets aren't playing, I'll definitely be tuned in for that Giant-Eagle game. There's a win for the Giants to win for New York, so I can't be mad with that. But you mentioned Slayton, so I guess that's a good segue into stardoms and sit-ems, as he is one of my stardoms this week. So I'll go first and mention why. So Slayton, like I said, is my stardom. He struggled against the Washington football team last week, but Slayton rarely has multiple bad weeks. He's clearly Daniel Jones's first favorite target. So I assume against a weakened and an injury-prone defense, like we said, the Eagles, I would assume Darius Slayton would go off and see his targets go up at least. So Giant fans, I'm sure that makes you very happy to hear. And if you have him on your bench, start him because you won't regret it. And the second is another risky pick. It's Robert Tonyan, tight end for the Green Bay Packers. I know Matt Angler, our social media guy, is shaking his head because he had him and has started him when puts up 1 point, which is unfortunate because a lot of people have been doing that. But he started off really hot. He hasn't scored a touchdown since his 3-TD game in week 4. And his one catch against San Francisco, very pathetic. But they're playing the Jaguars, and the Jaguars defense is terrible. Probably the worst defense in the league. They're the second worst team behind the winless Jets. They haven't won since week 1. The offensive, Aaron Rodgers will have a field day with them between Davante Adams, Aaron Jones. He'll split all the throws. He'll split the carries, whatever. The targets will be there. So Robert Tonyan, I assume, will have another solid week, if not similar to his week 4 beast game. So Steve, let's hear your picks.
Well, not to brag, but I nailed the Josh Allen pick last week. So hopefully by these two guys, they're not quarterbacks. Actually, they're both tight ends. Hopefully they'll do well. So my first one is Mike Gesicki, however you pronounce it, tight end for the Dolphins. I actually just picked him up in one of my leagues because Hayden Hurst is on bye. Listen, you know, him and Tua are starting to gain more chemistry. Now this is Tua just played his second career start. Now he'll be his third. And just even from his first start to his second start, he looked a lot more comfortable getting more guys involved, including Gesicki. So, you know, I think as they gain more chemistry, the more opportunities, the more production Gesicki will have. And it's a pretty good matchup for the Dolphins, and especially Gesicki being a tight end, because the Chargers are the 11th most generous defense against opposing tight ends. They're allowing, you know, like 11 most points to tight ends. And they've allowed 5 touchdowns in the last 5 games to tight ends. That's pretty much, I think one week it was like they allowed 2, and then one week they allowed 0. But basically, you know, if you do the math and stuff like that, it's about a touchdown a game to a tight end. So I think it's a pretty good matchup for Gesicki and the Dolphins. And I think that he may not go off for 30 points, but I think he'll have a solid game. And then my other guy that I say you should start, another tight end, is a tight end for the Lions, TJ Hockenson. You know, he was a first-round pick last year. Their first select, I think he went, what, like 7th or something last year overall in the draft. And right now he is ranked as a third best tight end in ESPN fantasy football. I don't know what he's ranked in other leagues. I know in my Yahoo League they do the rankings differently. But in ESPN, he's a third-ranked tight end. And he scored a touchdown in 4 of his past 5 games. So he's been getting in the end zone, which for you fantasy people know that's what you like to see. And over the past 3 games, he's gone 24 targets. So again, if you do the math, it's like average 8 targets a game. I mean, some games he maybe get more, some games he might get less, but still an average of 8 targets a game. That's not bad at all. And then Kenny Galladay's status is up there. He may be out. I believe he was out last week. Am I correct? Yes, so he's out last week. So if he's out this week, that just gives Hockenson more of an opportunity because that's one less guy that Stafford can go to, one less reliable guy that Stafford can go to. And then he's going against Washington defense, who hasn't been the best against tight ends. So I'm not going to say they're the worst defense against tight ends, but you know, they do struggle containing them. And I mean, we saw last week, Evan Engram, tight end for the Giants, scored. So again, I think just like Gesicki, I think it's a pretty good matchup for TJ Hockenson and the Detroit Lions.
I like those picks. I actually traded Gesicki, but I still think that is a very good pick. And Hockenson has been a bit of a surprise. He was supposed to be a stud coming out of Iowa last year, 2 years ago now. And he didn't have the best rookie year, but slowly he's proven to be a solid weapon for the Lions. So I really like that pick. Definitely something to look out for this weekend. It'll be interesting. Castle, let's hear yours.
So, by the way, Steve, I do like your picks. My first stardom actually is a teammate of your second stardom, and that's Marvin Jones. I do agree with you about the matchup against Washington. Galladay is actually questionable. As of today, he was at practice but did not physically participate, so most likely will not be expecting him to play. Marvin Jones' production has stepped up. Past 2 games, he's had 3 touchdowns. He's a deep threat for Stafford. I'm not too crazy about Washington's secondary. Landon Collins will be out again most likely, so that's huge for him. Jones is the type of guy where if you start him at your wide receiver 2 flex, he can really boost your team up. So start him. And the second guy that I'm going to say to start, and I know Josh is going to like this, is Dallas Goedert. And here's why I think you guys should start him if you have him. Carson Wentz has been dealing with a lot of second and third string receivers, hasn't really had too much production in the passing game, still has no Miles Sanders. Dallas Goedert is the first solid weapon that he'll have against my Giants. You know, I'm picking a guy against my team, but our history with the Eagles, things are very unpredictable. I could definitely see Goddard being a huge red zone target. Maybe he even looks to him a lot. I don't know. But if you've had Goddard sitting on your bench, he's been gaining some dust. Now is the time to start him up again.
Your Marvin Jones pick will be interesting to see kind of between me and you who, I mean, they can both be duds or they can both be studs, or one guy can be a dud, one guy can be a stud. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm not gonna lie, I've been quite impressed with the Detroit Lions offense.
It's been fun to watch.
And I want to say I really love that Dallas Goedert pick. I'm playing you in fantasy. I'm starting him in fantasy. Thanks for your advice. Can't wait to use that against you.
You're welcome. As you know, my running back situation has depleted. So any help I'm giving you at this point is it ain't gonna do too much.
Since I feel bad for you, I'll let you go first, given your sit-ums.
I appreciate that. As an opponent, that's a very respectable move on your end. So my first sit-um is quarterback Philip Rivers. I've not been crazy about Rivers this season. I think the contract that the Colts signed him to is absolutely ridiculous, but that's a conversation for another time. Did not have great numbers against Baltimore last week. Didn't score a touchdown. Didn't even get up to 10 points in fantasy. He's playing the Titans this week. I'm a huge fan of the Titans all around. I think their defense is going to give him a hard time. T.Y. Hilton, I do not believe, will be playing again, so that's going to hurt. He's going to be relying on the run game heavy again, which Tennessee will know. So if you have another quarterback, avoid Rivers. And my second sit-em, probably more on the obvious side, but if you're in a bigger league, he might be your only option at the tight end position, and that's Kyle Rudolph. He just hasn't been putting up the same numbers as he has in previous years, and especially going up on the road against your Bears, Steve. I know the Bears always bring something at home, especially defensively. So combination of that, the fact that they'll be putting pressure on Thielen and arguably the best running back in the league right now, Dalvin Cook. If you can avoid starting Rudolph, if you've got another tight end, do it. Sit Rudolph. I'm not even expecting him to get more than 3 catches.
Yeah, those are some solid sits.
Also, too, and plus Kyle Rudolph, I mean, now he kind of shares some of his reps with Irv Smith Jr., who they drafted, I'm pretty sure, in the first round. Same thing, either a year or two ago. So his presence, his role with the Vikings is slowly starting to they're starting to slowly, you know, get him off the team.
Yeah, he's kind of just like a locker room guy, it seems like, at this point.
Yeah.
And the Phillip Rivers one, I also like. I mean, T.Y. Hilton was taken off the injury report, so he is playing officially.
Oh, I thought he was still doubtful.
No, they upgraded him, so he's playing for sure. But, yeah, I really like that. I mean, the episode will come out after that game, so it kind of will be pointless. But it'll be good to see for us, at least. So, Steve, let's hear who you got sitting and riding the bench this week.
So, the first guy I got, which, you know, I don't know. In some leagues, he may be started somewhat regularly, but in some leagues, he may be on the bench a lot. But for this week, no matter what, whether he's your starting quarterback or just backup option, sit him, and that is Joe Burrow. And, I mean, I love Burrow, and he's been doing really solid this season. I mean, he's, like, top 10 in passing yards as a rookie. But that's the thing. He's still only a rookie. He still has a lot to learn, a lot to, you know, grow and develop into this league. And he's going against Pittsburgh's defense, which I don't care if he was a veteran or not, or a rookie, which he is. Pittsburgh defense, especially this year, is not an ideal matchup, especially for the Bengals, who they have weapons, but they just don't have a fully solid team. You know, they could use a lot more linemen. So that Pittsburgh pass rush is going to get to Burrow. And their secondary is good behind Minka. It's not the best, but they still play pretty solid. And no doubt, I know Pittsburgh defense kind of disappointed a little bit last week against Dallas, but they still made some big plays when they needed to. And I think Dallas, even though they were using like their 150th, you know, option at quarterback, not that much, but you know, like their fourth string quarterback, they still have a lot more weapons than the Bengals do. They still have a somewhat of a decent O-line, even with all the injuries and everyone out. You know, you still have Amari, you still have CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. You got Zeke, even though Zeke was questionable, ended up playing, but was limited. But Tony Pollard's not bad. So the Cowboys definitely have more weapons and more guys to go to than the Bengals do. And then the Bengals, too, like, you know, they were playing pretty well before the bye week. Burrow had 406 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Browns. And then the week against Tennessee, he didn't have that many yards, but he still had a couple touchdowns, and he led them past Tennessee, who Tennessee's a top team in this league and in the AFC. So I think coming off the bye week, it kind of stopped their momentum now. Like, they have no momentum going into this game. And this is a game that they need momentum. So I don't think Burrow is the best option. Then my other guy is Curtis Samuel. In the beginning of the season, I'm sure a lot of people may have not even drafted him, maybe just picked him up and just had him on the bench a lot. But now I'm sure they've been playing him. He's coming off some of the best games of the season and his career. You know, the Panthers have been looking to get him involved and getting some touches, whether that's receiving but also rushing. But he's going against Tampa Bay's defense. And I know Sunday night, Tampa Bay's defense pretty much got shredded by Drew Brees and the Saints. But they're still a solid unit. They're still one of the top defensive units in this league. and they're going to want to look for revenge to, you know, Brady in the offense, but also, you know, Levante David, Devin Smith, Devin White in this defense. So they're going to look to have a good game, a good bounce back game. And then, you know, the Panthers, they got some other weapons too that they can go to. DJ Moore, I know he's been slacking. They want to probably get him more involved. They do love Robbie Anderson. McCaffrey, I believe, will probably be out this week as he hurt his shoulder Sunday against the Chiefs. So that leaves Mike Davis. But when Mike Davis played for McCaffrey, he was solid. So it's not like they don't have guys to go to. They do. And then Bridgewater himself can, you know, he's a threat with his legs. So, you know, I don't think he's going to have a game like he did against the Chiefs.
Yeah. I mean, so McCaffrey's definitely out. Mike Davis is starting on Sunday. But I agree with you. Samuel, a lot of people probably have him starting, but I don't think he will do well. And same with Burrow. Even though I love him, I have Tyler Boyd. I hope he goes off, but I agree. It'll be tough.
Yeah, I like those two, Steve, and I appreciate the heads up on Samuel. I messed up last week by benching him, and I was going to be like, you know what? He's been doing really good. Let me bring him back in, but I got another guy to fill his spot. So, no, I'm all good with that now.
Great, yeah. If you didn't have another option, I guess, you know, could probably have gone away with it. But if you have other options, I would definitely sit him.
So my first one definitely will hurt you, Castle. I'm sorry. And I know I'm playing you, but it's Mike Evans for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Dagger to my heart, Josh. Dagger to my heart.
I'm aware. But look, the Buccaneers, they played terrible against the Saints. There's just no offense from Brady to running backs to tight ends to receivers. No one stood out. But this week, it's different. They're playing the Panthers. Okay. Antonio Brown really didn't get many snaps, so I assume his snap count will look to go up this week after getting him used to a week's worth of play, practice and game. Ronald Jones didn't look too impressive. Fournette, he's either hurt or not playing. Godwin, Gronk, there's a lot of guys that they could turn to. So I don't think Mike Evans will be as effective as he has been. And he didn't look that impressive last week either. And my other one is David Johnson, running back for the Houston Texans. This guy has been very inconsistent. He had a good stretch of games where he's putting up 11-plus points. But last week, he had 2 carries for 1 point. And I think he's hurt, so he may not even play. But facing Myles Garrett and the Cleveland Browns, that's tough. Myles Garrett is as good as it comes, whether it's pass rush, run defense, doesn't matter. He will be in the backfield the entire game, no matter who he's facing. So David Johnson, if he's not already on your bench, like he should be, I'd put him there and find a replacement. So those are my two sit-ums.
Yeah, I've lost my taste for David Johnson. I don't think I've ever had him on my team. And I know he was a big hit a few years ago when he went off, and then he was a top pick, and then he got hurt. And I don't know, ever since then, he just hasn't. I know he has done pretty solid this season, but I don't like him as, I mean, not, I don't like him as a person, but I just don't like him as a, I mean, as a football player, but I just don't like him as a fantasy player. I think his prime playing years are over, where he would produce, like, I don't think he will ever produce like the way he did. And I forgot exactly what year it was. Maybe 2016 it was. I think it was the year that the Cardinals – was it the year the Cardinals went to the NFC Championship or a year after that?
I think so, yeah.
Was that year, right? 2016 or 2015?
Yeah.
So – you know, and then since then, like I said, he just hasn't really done anything. So I don't know. I don't really look to target him in fantasy. So yeah, I definitely agree with that pick.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see how everything plays out. We'll touch up on recapping the draft next week, recapping this week in football, how our startems and sit-ems do, how our teams do, well, both of your teams do. So thank you all for tuning in and listening. I just want to remind everyone that our podcast is now on Apple Podcasts, so please subscribe and rate us. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram. Our social media guy, Matthew Angler, is doing a great job posting content daily. So please follow at the 3P Podcast. And I am signing off. So thank you all for listening.